Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's show, Love of Lourdes. In the run-up to Pope Benedict's visit to the Marian Shrine at Lourdes, an English bishop and a parishioner in his diocese tells us what makes Lourdes so special. The Bernadette story. Listen to the first episode in our radio drama narrating the story of Bernadette Soubirous, the protagonist of the extraordinary events at Lourdes 150 years ago. And papal audience. Pope Benedict continues his catechesis on the figure of St. Paul and what it means to be an apostle of Jesus. Benedict travels to France this Friday and will spend a day in Paris before proceeding to Lourdes, where he will take part in events marking the 150th anniversary of the Marian apparitions there. He returns to Rome next Monday afternoon. The small town of Lourdes in southwest France, where Our Lady appeared to Bernadette Soubirous in 1858, is the world's most famous Marian shrine and is visited by some 6 million pilgrims every year. Bishop Declan Lang of the English Diocese of Clifton has visited Lourdes about 20 times and has just returned from a week-long pilgrimage there. He told me why he finds Lourdes so special.
This year in Lourdes, it's a special year, a jubilee year, with the apparition of Our Lady to St. Bernadette 150 years ago. So there's a great feeling of expectation and joyfulness and hope in the town of Lourdes. And being the jubilee year, there are far more pilgrims than usual, even though I think they estimate in Lourdes on a normal year they get about 6 million pilgrims. This year they're going to get even more.
And in terms of popularity of shrines worldwide, where is it in the stakes?
I think it's one of probably the most popular shrines to Our Lady. Certainly, it's a very attractive place of pilgrimage to most European countries and now also to people from outside of Europe as well. So you get a tremendous sense of belonging to an international church, a universal church, and you hear all different languages throughout Lourdes being spoken.
Can you describe, for those of our listeners who've never been to the shrine, what's the actual shrine like itself? What's the atmosphere like when you go there?
One of the amazing things about the shrine in Lourdes is the large number of people who are at the grotto where Our Lady appeared to Bernadette, and yet at the same time there is a silence about the place. There's a tremendous busyness about the town outside of what they call the domain. But in the domain itself, people have a sense of reverence. And as they go to the grotto, which is obviously the main area of pilgrimage in Lourdes, it is a cave where Our Lady appeared to Bernadette. And within the cave, there is now an altar where Mass is often celebrated throughout the day. There's also within the grotto the stream of water that Bernadette was asked to discover. And that stream of water is still flowing, which I think symbolises really also the waters of eternal life.
How many times have you been to Lourdes? And what makes it so special in your view and indeed in those of other people who've been there as well?
I've probably been to Lourdes about 20 times now. I originally went at Easter with a children's pilgrimage. But in the past years, I've been going with the diocesan pilgrimage from my own diocese. And we also join other dioceses from Portsmouth, from Southwark, from East Anglia, Northampton, and also Stonyhurst College. And I think it's a popular place for pilgrimage because I think it's a place where people, they often come quite feeling burdened in life. And it's a place that seems to give people hope and refreshes them. To keep going, and they've sort of become alive. And I think one of the other amazing things about Lourdes is the tremendous sensitivity people have towards one another and the tremendous care that is shown by people towards one another, especially towards those who are sick and ill. And they are made to feel important, and they are made to feel as if they really do count. And they have, I think, their dignity often restored to them.
What percentage of the pilgrims that flock to the shrine each year would you say are Sikh? Are they a sizable minority?
They are a sizable minority. I suppose everyone who goes to Lourdes in one way or another is looking for healing of one sort or another. But those who are physically Sikh, they would be a sizable minority. And that sickness as well, of course, isn't just physical sickness. Sometimes it's sickness of the mind, people often suffering from depression. So all sorts of people come to Lourdes. We're all looking for a healing, an inner healing, I would say, which they receive in Lourdes.
And what kind of feedback were you getting there from people in Lourdes to the Pope's upcoming visit to the shrine? Is there a visible mood of excitement?
There is a mood of excitement in Lourdes with the anticipated visit of the Holy Father. And people are talking about it, and people are looking forward to it. And in a practical way as well, they are sort of building altars, and they're moving the furniture of Lourdes around a bit to enable there to be large gatherings with the Holy Father. And people are talking about it, or about where the Holy Father is staying. And in fact, I was talking to somebody as I was leaving Lourdes, whose daughter actually is going to be, who lives next door to the place where the Holy Father is staying. So they have a great anticipation and looking forward. And I had lunch with the Bishop of Tarbes and Lourdes, and he obviously also is looking forward to the Pope's coming.
What message do you think the people at Lourdes want to hear from the Pope when he's there?
I think the message that people want to hear from the Holy Father is in many ways the message that he's given in his encyclical letters on love and on hope. And I think it's that confidence that we can have in God and the love that God has for us all, and that in that love we discover that God has for us, we find a newness of our lives and a hope in our life.
As you said earlier, you've been to Lourdes many, many times. Have you got any particularly memorable anecdotes, be they poignant, uplifting, inspirational, that you can share with us about experiences at Lourdes that you've gleaned from pilgrims who went there?
One of the memorable things about Lourdes for me is always the International Mass and, as I say, the celebration of the Universal Church. But at the other end, you hear stories from pilgrims, their own individual stories. I was talking to somebody this year who had been away from the church for 48 years. And for some reason, he wasn't quite sure why, he was attracted to go to Lourdes in this Jubilee year, which he had heard from somebody else, and was coming back to the life of the church. And he actually, in the few days that we were in Lourdes, well, you could see that he was becoming a changed person. He was very nervous and hesitant when he arrived, and when he left Lourdes, he was a very joyful person, and obviously it had been a good place for him to be. There are other people who have been burdened with illness, and they too come away sort of feeling new people. There was an occasion as well where somebody went to Lourdes wanting to die. This was a few years ago, and she, in fact, that's what happened to her. She had her last few days of her life in Lourdes, and she's now buried in Lourdes. And her friends who brought her to Lourdes, they return every year. And as part of their pilgrimage, personal pilgrimage, they go up to the cemetery in Lourdes to say hello to her and to renew those friendships.
Steve Young is a 41-year-old Catholic working in the aerospace industry who lives in the city of Bristol, where the Clifton Diocese is situated. Steve has been to Lourdes no fewer than 25 times, and in a surprising admission, told me that before he went there for the first time, he hated all that Lourdes represented. So why was he so anti-Lourdes? And how come he changed his mind? Well, let's find out more.
My mother was a worker with HCPT, the Pilgrimage Trust. She also worked permanent nights, and I didn't get to see my mother very much during my youth when I was growing up, because she'd either be in bed or at work. And then the times when I had holiday at Easter, she would up and off she would go to Lourdes, and she'd be really excited about going. And I used to think, you're excited because you're leaving me. And then when she came back from Lourdes, she'd be all down and missing Lourdes and missing the children that she'd been away with HCPT. And it got to the stage where I actually hated everything that Lourdes stood for. It wasn't until I went to Lourdes that I realised why my mum was happy to be going and sad to be coming home.
So what convinced you in the end to actually go to Lourdes if you had such negative feelings about this place? What made you change your mind?
I got to the stage where I was working. I was doing an apprenticeship in engineering, so I was earning money. And I could afford to go to Lourdes. And I basically said to my mother, I'm going to prove to you that you can go to Lourdes once. You don't need to go back. You don't need to be sad about coming back. Lourdes doesn't have a hold on people. So I went for that 1 year, 25 visits later to Lourdes. I'm still going back.
So describe for me when you went that first time. How long did it take you to realise that Lourdes was something special? I mean, and when can you remember that moment when it happened?
I certainly can remember that moment. I was lucky enough to visit the grotto for the first time in the evening, when it was dark and it was quite peaceful. I can honestly say within a matter of seconds of seeing the grotto, the area, just something came over me that I knew that I was in the right place and that something very special had happened in the place where I was stood. It was almost an instant love for Lourdes.
Now, of course, 2008 is a special year, the 150th anniversary of the apparitions at Lourdes. What kind of feedback were you getting from people there, you know, given that this was the 150th anniversary and that the Pope is about to go there?
When I visited recently, I took my family down and members of my family who are non-Catholics to Lourdes. The feedback I got from them was, first of all, they couldn't believe how busy it was. The excitement that you get from the Holy Father visiting Lourdes, you know, everybody's really excited about it. I think the 150th anniversary, it's beautiful. The way that the authorities of Lourdes have put together the walk where you can trace the steps of Bernadette, where you can go to where she left to visit the grotto for that first time in the Casho, the way that you can follow the blue line down into, which brings you into St. Michael's Gate, although it's not the gate Bernadette came through. You can go to where Bernadette was baptized, or at least the font that she was baptized in. You can go to where she made her first Holy Communion. And for people, believers or non-believers, who could go to Lourdes, they still have the opportunity to follow the path of Bernadette. I just hope that when the Holy Father goes there, he will inspire more people to go to Lourdes to find out for themselves.
What particular message do you think both the people at Lourdes and the pilgrims who go there will want to hear from Pope Benedict during his visit?
I think for me, it would be this very special place that he is in, that he is preaching from, he is praying in, all came to light because of a very simple person. You do not have to have a title. You do not have to be somewhere up within power for something very, very special to happen to you. Bernadette was a very simple girl. She was not educated. She was in poor health. Yet somehow she was chosen to be the messenger of Our Lady and to bring us to Lourdes. And, you know, and for Pope Benedict to be going there, it's great. You know, I hope he inspires more people, not only from France and Europe, but from all over the world, to go to Lourdes, to see everything that is in Lourdes, and to feel as special as I feel when I'm in Lourdes.
How different do you think your life would have been? Or put it another way, how has that pilgrimage to Lourdes changed your life and changed particularly your spiritual life?
Before I went to Lourdes, I was quite embarrassed about telling people that I was a Catholic. When I came back from Lourdes, I realized that the only way that I could keep going back to Lourdes was to be proud of my faith, to show my faith, and to never, ever be scared to say again, I am a Roman Catholic. The very first year I went to Lourdes, my mother bought me a present, goes in my wallet with me everywhere I go, and it says, It's just a little card that says, I'm a Roman Catholic. In case of an accident, please call a priest. And I've kept that with me 20-odd years. I will continue to keep it with me. I'm very proud that Lourdes made me a stronger Catholic and a proud Catholic.
I was speaking there to Steve Young from Bristol. And earlier you heard the voice of Bishop Declan Lang of Clifton. Today we begin running a six-part radio drama narrating the story of Bernadette Soubirous of Lourdes to coincide with Pope Benedict's visit to the Marian Shrine later this week. The play was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett and tells the story of St. Bernadette, the 14-year-old peasant girl in Lourdes to whom Our Lady appeared 18 times during the year of 1858. Bernadette was the eldest child of a miller in the town who had fallen on hard times. And the first episode of our play opens with the sound of the Soubirous family reciting the rosary one winter evening.
What a night. It's freezing. I never remember a winter like this. Do you, George?
No, I certainly don't. And they say there's worse coming.
Minute. What's that?
Huh? Oh, that's the Soubirous saying the rosary. They say it every night.
Soubirous, you said? Oh, the one who had the mill at Bowley.
That's him.
Yeah. I hear he's very badly off.
That's true enough. You know what they're living in, don't you?
This old basement here?
Yeah. And you know what it was?
No.
It's the cachot, the old jail. It was so damp they had to close it down. The convicts were all getting ill.
And now this Soubirous lives here, with all his family.
Uh-huh. Wife and four kids.
He's got some courage.
Poor fellow. They put him on the street. I mean, he had no choice.
Hasn't he got a job?
Oh, you're kidding. What, the way things are.
And how do they feed all those children?
I don't know. They say they eat grass soup.
Poor creatures. They won't live long.
No, indeed. Times are bad for all of us, man.
Who's there? Jacomet? Oh, good evening, Chief Constable. A good man.
Evening, Mayor.
Come and sit down. Here, take a look at this. It's a confidential report sent to Paris last August by the District Attorney General.
The grain harvest is less than a third of the normal quantity. The leaf blight, which has been ruining every grape harvest, is now at a maximum. Maize, which in the month of May was at 13 francs, now costs 27 francs. Corn is now at 42 francs. It was. This was when? August?
Yes, I know what you're going to say. It's a lot worse than that now. But what are they doing about it? And what are we going to do about it? The people are in a desperate state.
Well, what does this Attorney General suggest?
He doesn't suggest anything. He just presents the case. Listen to this. The problem is doubly insoluble since there is no railway to transport the corn, nor has the population the money to buy it. The hunger of the poor is on the increase. Famine is at the gates. Jacobi, do you hear that? The villagers are coming here. Listen, there's a whole lot of them. Jacobi, these people mean business. Look at them. But I can't do anything to help them. What am I going to do? I can't make bread out of thin air.
Don't worry, May. I'll soon fix things. You leave it to me. I'll see to them.
You'll have to be quick. They'll break down the door if we don't answer.
Hey, just stop that wreckage, you lot, or I'll put the whole lot of you inside right away.
We must have
bread. Get moving. Back home, all of you.
Yeah, he's snoring. He's snoring. And he's keeping away.
You can feed our children. You have no rights to see anybody.
I'm sure you are all right.
Get back home, all of you.
But we are not for people.
Hey, you down there. Open the door. Police.
All right, I'm coming. There. Here I am. Now, who wants me? What's it all about?
You're under arrest.
Under arrest? What do you mean?
What do you want with him?
What have I done?
He hasn't done anything wrong.
I have to search the house. Sergeant, go ahead.
Yes.
Here. Where do you think you're going? The children are asleep. Bernadette's not well.
What's the matter with her?
Well, she's got asthma, poor child. And ever since the cholera, she's never been a day without an attack.
It's not exactly healthy. You got chickens?
No, I have not, Captain. I am a miller. I had a wonderful mill at Bolly, didn't I, my dear?
You had. But now you don't have anything. And now you even want to arrest him. Who denounced him, anyway? And what for? There. Now you've woken them up.
Mama, who are these men? What do they want? Why are they holding Papa like that?
A charge of theft has been made, Madame, by Maison Gross, the baker. What? He accuses your husband.
What? Maison Gross? Accuses me of theft? What's he talking about? I worked for him this summer. I never stole a thing from him.
In fact, he says he never had occasion to complain about you.
Well, what does he want, then?
Last night, 2 sacks of flour were stolen from his shop. He suspects your husband.
But I never went out last night.
My husband never goes out at night. And if you really want to know, he doesn't go out in the day either. He hasn't been ever since he's been out of work.
Well,
Maison Gross says it's your state of poverty that makes him think you must be responsible for the theft.
Oh, so that's the way, is it? Of course, it's not going to be the man with a full stomach who goes out thieving. But I have always worked, honestly. And if I'm out of work now, what fault is that of mine?
My dear Francois, the poor are always guilty.
There's no flour here, but I did find this.
A wooden pole? Who does it belong to? Where did you get it, Soubirous?
Well, I found it outside here. Nobody seemed to want it.
That'll do. That's enough for us. It's already a proof of guilt. Now, Soubirous, just you come along with us.
Just a minute. Let me get my boots on, at least.
Here, my dear.
No. Give me those boots, madame. We'll take them along with us. They'll be useful for prints. Sergeant, take these. Come on now, Soubirous.
Goodbye, Louise. Now, don't you worry now. They'll have to let me off right away when they see that I'm innocent. After all, I am innocent. You just take care of the children, Bernadette especially. Don't let her go out in the cold. She's poorly enough already. Be good, children. Toinette, help your mother.
Come on, you. Get a move on. We can't hang about all day.
I'm ready, gentlemen. Let's go.
Francois! Oh, Holy Mother of God, what will become of us?
Thank you.
The play, The Bernadette Story, was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. And you can hear the second episode on our programme tomorrow. At his weekly general audience today, Pope Benedict continued his catechesis on the figure of St. Paul and what it means to be an apostle of Jesus. Chris Altieri reports.
Pope Benedict XVI held his weekly general audience Wednesday in the Paul VI Audience Hall.
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti.
In his catechesis, the Holy Father returned to the life and legacy of St. Paul the Apostle, concentrating on St. Paul's view of what it means to be an apostle of Jesus Christ. Speaking in English to the faithful, the Holy Father said, even though St. Paul was not one of the original 12 disciples, Paul nevertheless claims the title of apostle for himself because he was chosen and transformed by the grace of God and shared the three principal characteristics of the true apostle.
The first is to have seen the Lord and to have been called by him. One becomes an apostle by divine vocation, not by personal choice. The second characteristic also underlines the divine initiative. An apostle is someone who is sent and therefore acts and speaks as a delegate of Christ, placed totally at his service. The third characteristic is dedication to the work of proclaiming the gospel and founding Christian communities. St. Paul can point to his many trials and sufferings that speak clearly of his courage, his dedication to the mission.
Pope Benedict concluded his English remarks by praying that the example of St. Paul's apostolic zeal might continue to encourage all the faithful of today.
St. Paul can point to his many trials and sufferings that speak clearly of his courage, his dedication to the mission. In this context, he sees an identification between the life of the apostle and the gospel that he preaches. The apostle himself is despised when the gospel is rejected. St. Paul was steadfast in his many difficulties and persecutions, sustained above all by the unfailing love of Christ. May the example of his apostolic zeal inspire and encourage us today.
The Holy Father greeted the faithful in many languages, including English.
I'm happy to greet all the English-speaking visitors, pilgrims present to this audience, including the all-party parliament group from the United Kingdom, and the participants in the seminar on social communications at Santa Croce Pontifical University. I also greet the groups from England, Ireland, Denmark, Sweden, South Africa, Zambia, India, and the United States of America. May your pilgrimage renew your love for the Lord and his church, and may God bless you all.
This weekend, Pope Benedict travels to France to mark the 150th anniversary of the Marian apparitions at Lourdes. I'm Chris Altieri.
That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so do send us an email. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.